Greetings and welcome to Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And we're doing one band that's Nine Inch Nails. I couldn't really come up with a good way of segueing into Nine Inch Nails, but just with the number thing. Yeah, Nine Inch Nails, Trent Reznor specifically, because we're kind of going to kind of follow his career through all of this. Of course, the driving force behind Nine Inch Nails, but also has branched off and done a lot of great stuff recently that's outside of the Nine Inch Nails brand. But we listened to, personally listened to all the Nine Inch Nails albums and EPs, and then I got into a couple of the soundtracks.
I did the same. I listened to the entire thing and then jumped into the soundtracks, and I've got thoughts.
Yeah, well, let's get to those. What? Tell me your thoughts.
Okay, I will tell you right off the top of the thing. I love hated this week more than any love hate this week I've ever had on any show we've ever done. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So, in kind of a nutshell, the Nine Inch Nails stuff. I've owned Nine Inch Nails stuff since they started coming out. There's a part of me that's always kind of liked it.
Sure.
But I've always liked it in small doses.
Yes.
The only thing I can draw kind of a comparison to was Primus, where Primus in small doses, awesome. Primus in huge 1 week span of catalog makes me want to never listen to Primus again. I'm really glad the soundtracks were at the end of this week for me, and I was able to kind of decompress from all the Nine Inch Nails because everything is so anxiety inducing.
It's very angsty.
Yeah.
One of my, probably my biggest complaint. I don't know if I love hated it as much as you did. I think that as a general rule for Nine Inch Nails for me, with a few exceptions, the stuff that is instrumental, I really, really like. Mm-hmm. So his soundtrack work for me is probably at the top of the list. His vocals in small doses, I really like, but his vocals, one right after another, start to blur together for me because mm-hmm. There's very little variance in the level of his delivery, good and bad. I mean, you know, you get a Nine Inch Nails album, you know what to expect, and that's a really good thing. But on the other side of that, it does make for a little bit of sameness. You know, when everything is cayenne pepper, nothing is spicy.
Well, it's interesting because he does have two. I feel like he has two speeds. He's got ramping up speed, and then he's got screaming speed.
Right, exactly. There's the Trent Reznor that's kind of building up, and then it goes into this.
Yes,
And those are the two.
Yep, it works. There are things about it that really do work, and I do have a greater appreciation for him as a songwriter because I think that the people who have covered songs of his have done amazing things with them. That tells me that the bones of the songs are good, and
his ability to create an arrangement is bar none. It is fantastic. And he's got a really good knack for making discordant sounds work together. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether it's the chromatic or it's the dyadic or whatever. There's a chord progression that he tends to rely on, and he'll not only do it with chords overall, but also with melodies where the melody kind of follows each of those notes individually. Yep. And
I'm
really impressed with that.
He's got also an ability to write, to be very lyrically descriptive. So like songs like Hurt, let's use Hurt for example. When I first heard it, I'm like, okay, great, whatever. Then, you know, Cash does it and all of a sudden it's something moving and powerful. So it's kind of like, he's kind of like an angry Bob Dylan.
Yeah. You know what? That's a good comparison because he does have the ability to really convey emotion and story and feeling in his lyric writing and in his musical arrangements. And maybe it takes bringing it out of style, that vocal style that he has, to hear it with somebody else where you recognize just how talented he is in that area.
Yeah, I think so.
It certainly is a situation. If I hear an instrumental by him, there's an 80% chance I'm going to love it. If I hear a vocal track by him, there's probably a 25% chance I'm going to love it. And I really do. There's a lot of stuff on Pretty Hate Machine and Downward Spiral that I really like because those are the classic albums.
But is it because of familiarity that you like it, or is it because you like it? You like it.
Whole and Closer and things that, you know, Bite the Hand That Feeds. It's those songs that we know and like. And I don't know, I can't go back and remember how I felt the first time I heard those, but there's something about his ability to even make what sounds like hardware power tools grinding against each other sound like music.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about the history and the life, the legacy, the life,
the legacy
of Trent Reznor. Michael Trent Reznor, didn't know his first name was Michael, was born in 1965 in Pennsylvania. He started playing the piano at 12 and seemed to have an aptitude for music very early on. He reportedly was a really good kid who was involved in Boy Scouts, skateboarding, and he even built models. In high school, he learned to play the saxophone and the tuba.
Well, that explains why he's so angry.
That the tuba would make anybody angry.
Yeah.
Just kind of funny to think of Trent Reznor playing the saxophone.
It's like a tuned fart.
That's right, exactly. He was involved in the jazz and marching bands back then. He also won an award in school for roles in Jesus Christ Superstar and The Music Man. Really want to hear. Now I want to change the cover I want to hear to Shmapoopy or whatever that song is called for Music Man when they're all dancing in the town square.
Yes.
Is that what it's called? Shmapoopy?
I don't know. I know which one you're talking about. I haven't worked on Music Man in 25 years, so I don't know.
Shmapoopy, whatever that's called. Anyway, that's my new Nine Inch Nails cover song request. while he was in high school, he joined Option 30, a local band, and he played frequently with those guys. In 1983, he started studying computer engineering at Allegheny College. After a year of college, he left and moved to Cleveland to follow his dreams of being a musician. And his first gig in Cleveland was with Urge, a cover band.
Urge.
I like it. Option 30 and Urge. He joined The Innocent in 1985 and the band Exotic Birds in 1986. They can be seen in the movie Light of Day as The Problems.
Okay, so it's weird that that comes up because we mentioned this movie a couple episodes ago under the wrong title. But you made the crack about Michael J. Fox and Pat Benatar.
Joan Jett.
Yeah, doing drugs. And you called it Bright Lights, Big City, but it's actually this one. It's weird that that's come up because how often does that movie come up in regular conversation?
It is weird. Yeah, that seems like a weird
synchronicity
to have. Now, Bright Lights, Big City still was a Michael J. Fox movie.
Yes.
And he still does do drugs and drink to excess in that movie. So there is a
common thread
comparison.
Yeah.
Is Light of Day just about the band, or does he do drugs there as well?
I don't know if he does. I just remember that you mentioned.
I think I joined those two movies. Like Bright Lights, Big City is Alex Keaton doing coke, mm-hmm. and Light of Day is Alex Keaton and his sister, who's not Justine Bateman, in a band.
Yeah,
and I joined those. It really should be called The Bright Light of Day in the Big City. Is what I should just merge those two, make one big movie out of them. So, yeah. Okay. So Light of Day is the movie I think I was thinking of with Joan Jett, but he does drugs in Bright Lights, Big City.
Yes.
You know, the funny thing is I haven't seen either of those movies. So I'm really just going off of what the trailers were and and what the reviews. I never saw either of those movies.
We could actually, we could make it really perverse and go back to the future of Light of Day.
That's right. The secret of my success in the big city under the bright lights in the future. Reznor got a job working at a recording studio as an assistant engineer and janitor. Like, you can see all of these things, all of these different areas planting the seeds, the musician stuff, the computer engineering stuff, because mm-hmm. his music definitely is very well sequenced and produced on computer technology. And then this engineering stuff. I don't know about the janitoring. You know, I guess that thing, that giant machine that buffs the floors, there's got to be a song where he uses that as a musical instrument.
Well, and also the anger of playing in you know, bad cover bands.
Right, that too. And the anger of being a janitor.
Yeah.
He was allowed to use the studio when it wasn't booked for free to start recording his own demos. He was unable to find a band that could bring his music to life the way he wanted it. So following the example set by Prince, he played all of the instruments except the drums.
And this is still something that he does now. He has brought other people in on occasion to help fill out slots. And we'll talk about a few of them. But it's mostly him doing all the work. So it's really kind of impressive.
It's very impressive. And when we say he doesn't play the drums, he's just basically sequencing those on a drum machine, probably, right?
Oh, that, and I know he's brought in drummers to get the live sound before. So,
gotcha. Okay. Wow, Grohl. Could you imagine Grohl and Reznor like an album with the two of them together writing and recording together?
That'd be actually there's a part of me that really wants that to happen now.
Oh my God, how amazing would that be? It'd be awesome.
Then we could throw in Tobias Forge from Ghost.
No, we couldn't.
Why not?
Yeah, okay, we could. Okay. Whichever incarnation.
You liked Ghost.
I did like Ghost. I liked Ghost a lot more than I expected to like Ghost. All right. The demos, by the way, were well received by many, and he was signed to TVT Records. I think, TVT Records, didn't they start out as TV Tunes?
I don't know. Maybe. I think that sounds about right.
Turned into like a legitimate television tunes. So Steve Gottlieb like started out as this TV Tunes Records, and they released these albums called Television's Greatest Hits, which was just like compilations of theme songs from TV shows.
I owned most of them.
I did too. I still do. And then he started like working with actual bands, and he worked with, Nine Inch Nails, but also XTC, Underworld, that we talked about a couple weeks ago, the Black Crowes. It's funny. It's like totally legitimizing something that was just like a little novelty record label. Mm-hmm. And keeping the name enough to where it's like TVT. Isn't that TV Tunes?
TVT. We released TVT. Your songs.
There you go. In 1988, nine of the Right Track demos were released unofficially as Purest Feeling. And that next year, 1989, he released Pretty Hate Machine. It was a moderate commercial success at the time. It certified gold a few years later in 1992.
So he sampled a huge variety of artists for this. Prince, Public Enemy, Jane's Addiction. These are just a few of the people, but it feels like he went Paul's Boutique on this, but he gave everyone credit.
Right. Yeah, right. was it on the stealth? Right. Under the table?
Yeah.
In 1990, Trent worked with a Ministry side project called 1000 Homo DJs. Trent sang on the cover of Black Sabbath's Supernaut because his label got upset his vocals had to be distorted so that his voice was unrecognizable. He also played with a band called The Revolting Cox that same year as well.
So that cover of Supernaut was on an album called Nativity in Black, a tribute to Black Sabbath.
Oh, and I didn't realize. Wow.
In the cover, it just said 1000 Homo DJs. It didn't say anything about Trent Reznor. Knowing that now, I went back and listened and I can hear it.
Can you hear his vocals in that?
Yeah.
I'm sure you distort it, but if you know it's him, it's really easy to pick out the things that you know of his voice.
Yeah.
That's really cool. In 1991, Nine Inch Nails toured with Lollapalooza, and they won Best Heavy Metal Performance Grammy for Wish. The label was starting to pressure him into doing a follow-up, so he started working under other names to prevent studio tinkering, and that led to the 1992 EP, Broken. In 1994, he released The Downward Spiral. This one entered the charts at number 2 and remains the highest-selling album of his in the U.S.
So, Adrian Belew, he played guitar on that album. Now, Adrian Belew's huge. He's the guy that's played with King Crimson. He's a legendary guitar player.
I saw him with David Bowie back David Bowie did a Greatest Hits tour in the 90s that was awesome. And Adrian Belew was his, not only his opening act, but also his guitarist for the show. And it was fantastic.
Yeah, no, this is huge that he's able to get him on his second album, which shows a lot of credibility and trust on Adrian's part.
Sure. Trent moved into the house on Cielo Drive where the Manson murders occurred, and he built a studio. That's funny, especially right now with the whole the popularity of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and the whole the altered history, the Tarantinoizing of history of the house, the Tate Sharon Tate house.
He called the studio Le Pig after the writings that were found on the wall at the crime scene.
Wow, did they? When they sold the house, had they not, like, did they, did the realtor not, like, fresh coat of paint?
No, I'm sure carpet? They did, but there's photographs of the crime scene all over the world. True. I mean, there's...
That's true. So we probably saw from that. That would be great if, like, you could buy the house, like, oh, no, no, don't fix it up. I'll take it as is.
It's a time capsule.
Yeah, we kept it in, wrapped in plastic tarp to keep it fresh. Between touring, studio perfectionism, struggles with addiction, and writer's block, the album was delayed.
So I don't know if where this comes in exactly in 1994, but the performance he did at Woodstock 94 pretty much sums up that entire Woodstock, because they're covered in mud. It's raining, the crowd's going nuts, and that's the image of Woodstock 94 everyone seems to have.
It totally is, yeah.
And so, I mean, that was a year-defining and maybe even a decade-defining moment for music.
It was, because everybody at the time that was huge was performing there. I mean, the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Blues Traveler was there.
Blues Traveler was there. Yeah. I mean, it was a good attempt to recreate the thing that happened in 1969 with all of those bands. Was it still a 3-day festival when they did in 1994?
I don't remember. I just know that, I bought the VHS of it and the soundtrack. Yeah. So,
yeah. Also in 1994, Trent produced the soundtrack for Natural Born Killers. Nine Inch Nails added the song Burn to the film. He also recorded a cover of Joy Division's Dead Souls for the movie The Crow.
Mentioned this before, and I'm still very serious about doing this sometime. We need to do a show where we do a list of soundtracks that either make the movie better or are better than the movie.
And do you think this is one?
I think The Crow fits that. I think The Crow is...
You're talking about Natural Born Killers. Almost the entirety of the Natural Born Killers soundtrack, if I remember correctly, is... Now, I guess not the entirety, but a good majority of it, if I remember correctly, is Leonard Cohen music.
Oh.
Who we've... Yeah. Which wasn't as much a love-hate week for you as it was a hate week.
Yeah, no. That was a tough week. It was a tough week for you. Don't even try to stand off like you're on some mountaintop with Leonard Cohen.
It was a tough week. It was a tough week for me until we got to I'm Your Man, and everything after that I really like. But yeah, the stuff, his early stuff, really, really tough. He actually, Trent Reznor said that he watched the film over 50 times to get in the mood to produce the soundtrack.
Well, it explains why, because he, you know, had to get angry.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the soundtrack. I take it back. The there's only, two Leonard Cohen songs, Waiting for the Miracle and The Future. I just connect that song, The Future, so much with that soundtrack, because I want to say it's the thing that plays over the end and the credits. The movie also has Anthem by Leonard Cohen, a couple of other songs by Peter Gabriel. A lot of stuff like Patsy Cline, Peter Gabriel, Duane Eddy, Bob Dylan, Cowboy Junkies. Maybe I need to see that movie again because I forgot the soundtrack was so good.
Well,
or maybe I just need to go listen to the soundtrack.
Or here, I'll fix your sentence for myself as maybe I just need to see that movie.
Oh, you haven't? Well, yeah.
I've never seen Natural Born Killers either.
You've never seen it? No, you need to see it, but I don't know if you do need to see them. And, I mean, a lot of it takes place in a prison.
Yeah.
So there might be some PTSD that you get from
it's kind of a joke, but, you know, at the end of Tarzan, when the bad guy falls and gets hung up on the weeds.
Yeah.
That's hard for me because I dealt with, I dealt with suicides when I was working at the jail. Yeah. And that kind of imagery is really kind of difficult.
Oof. Yeah, that'd be rough. That'd be a rough movie. I'm not going to say you need to see it. It's very good, but I'm not going to say you need to see it.
But back to the original commentary, we do need to do a show where either the soundtrack makes the movie better.
Either makes the film or is better than the film.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Because I think The Crow is a good movie. I think it's a fantastic movie because of the soundtrack.
Yes. You get no argument from me at all. I think the soundtrack on its own is excellent.
Yeah.
And the movie is just like, oh, they created an okay music video for that really good album.
Yeah. Yeah.
In 1996, he was brought in to do the music for the video game Quake. He also helped record sound effects and ambient audio.
Did you?
Yeah,
okay.
I did.
Yeah. Was it good? I mean,
I played all those. Yeah, Quake, Doom, all those first-person shooters. Quake, I remember being really good, and I remember music in Quake that I don't remember. There may not have been music in games like Pathways into Darkness or Doom or anything like that, but I definitely remember the music from Quake. So that's cool. That definitely says something. Mm-hmm. 1997 saw him producing the soundtrack for Lost Highway. I have that one too. He worked with Peter Christofferson on a couple of tracks. The song The Perfect Drug was recorded for the soundtrack of that. You make me hard when I'm all soft inside. I see the truth when I'm all stupid eyes. In 1999, he released the album Fragile. This was a double album. It did find some success, but lost the label and Trent more money than it made. He funded the tour out of his own pocket.
Which I'm pretty sure was able to recoup the album losses and help himself out, too.
I'm sure, yeah. In 2001, Trent was asked to score the movie 1 Hour Photo, but the music wasn't used and eventually ended up on Still.
1 Hour Photo is the first time Robin Williams went creepy, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The first time? Had he done that?
I don't know. Oh, he was kind of creepy in Dead Again, but he only had bit part. But that was super creepy, Robin Williams.
The 1 Hour Photo was super creepy, Robin Williams, for sure. Oh, there was a... Wasn't he creepy in, what was the one where a detective goes up to Antarctica and it's like almost always daytime and it's insomnia, I think.
Oh, maybe. I think he was.
I want to say that he was the bad guy in that one as well. Mm-hmm. 2002, All That Could Have Been was released. This was also a double album. It contains live music from the Fragility version 2.0 tour on disc one, and disc two is a studio album, the aforementioned Still. Still is made up of deconstructed versions of songs, some new material as well, and there was also a 2 DVD set that was sold separately. Id Software brought him back in 2003 to be the sound engineer for Doom 3. However, because of outside forces, his work did not appear in the game.
So this again is his, the record label going,
slapping his wrist. Uh-huh. That's a bummer, man. They really constricted him. I love the fact that with indie labels now, bands can do this themselves and just,
he started doing some stuff, kind of basically tell the music industry and the labels to pound sand here in a little bit.
Good. In 2004, he was credited as the musical consultant for the film Man on Fire. That movie features 6 Nine Inch Nails songs.
That's the Denzel Washington movie, right?
Yeah.
Not about the Human Torch, but about Denzel Washington.
No, this is exactly right. 2005, the album With Teeth is released. I got my wish, Hammond.
You did.
Features Dave Grohl as a guest on the album. I swear to God, I didn't look through this before I started reading it.
Thank you.
I just want a full album of Dave Grohl and Trent Reznor working together. The writing of With Teeth was influenced by Trent's battle with substance abuse, and it holds a very respectable 71% on Metacritic. A version of You Know What You Are was used in the film Doom. So his music even makes it into the horrible movie adaptation of that video.
Was it horrible?
Yeah, it was horrible. We watched it for film.
Oh, I know it was horrible. It had The Rock in it. It was already better just because he was in it.
Well, yeah. But The Rock himself isn't enough to make a movie great, but he's good.
Yeah.
And I'm never going to argue with The Rock ever. In 2007, the album Year Zero was released. This is a concept album that shares his critique of the policies of the U.S. government. It presents a dystopian view of 2022. Boy, we're getting close to that, aren't we?
Well, I was going to say, he had no idea that he was going to be no freaking Nostradamus, did he?
No kidding. What he thinks, like, yeah, see everybody, I told you, yep. I warned you.
Told you so.
The disc had a thermochrome heat-sensitive CD face that would be black when it was first opened, but reveals a binary code when it was heated.
So the code translated to a website, and at the website you could download or play an augmented reality game.
Oh, really? Cool. Mm-hmm. That's extermial.net.
Yeah.
Is what it looks like it says. Oh, that's really cool. There was an insert in the album that had a phone number so you could report people to the United States Bureau of Morality.
So when you called it, you got a recording that said, by calling this number, you and your family are implicitly pleading guilty to the consumption of anti-American media and have been flagged as potential militants.
Wow.
Again, a lot closer to home than I'd like it to be right now.
Yeah, I think we could have easily gotten that as well as our Space Force. The album was called one of the best of 2007 by Rolling Stone magazine. In 2008, he released Ghosts, discs 1-4, or volumes 1-4. This was his first independent release. And for me, this was the first of his albums that I liked from start to finish. It is mostly instrumental. I think it might even be all instrumental. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed this whole thing from start to finish, and you start to see the material that would become stuff like the Social Network soundtrack and things like that. It's so good. The album had Alessandro Cortini, again, Adrian Belew, and Brian Viglione as guests. Reznor described the album as a soundtrack for daydreams. I can totally see that. It was released under a Creative Commons license and in a wide variety of packaging.
Including one of them that was this ultra deluxe limited edition. Sounds like you're describing some sort of Pokemon card.
Right.
It sold for $300.
Wow.
Which is, I say $300 like it's like I haven't spent money like that on a box set. I mean,
sure. On a box set, yes. But on a, I mean, I guess this technically, it's four discs. It's a four disc set.
Yeah.
But is it $300 for four disc set? I don't know if I could even justify that. I'd spend that like on the entire remastered Prince catalog. Like if they did a box set CD of all of Prince's music, I could see spending $300 on that.
So Metallica has been releasing these deluxe box sets of each of their early albums. They'd released Master Puppets just recently, and it usually holds between like four and six vinyls, and then six to eight CDs, and then two to four DVDs, and then a book and a bunch of extra stuff like backstage passes and stickers and picture discs and stuff like that. And they come in these gigantic boxes and they're pretty expensive, but I don't feel bad doing it because I feel like you're really getting your money's worth.
Yeah. You're getting all that other memorabilia and materials and stuff like that, as opposed to, well, I could just get the digital version of this for $30
or free because it's under Creative Commons.
Oh, right. Yeah, no kidding. Wow. Forgot about that part. Yeah, that's crazy. A user-generated film festival was announced that invited fans to make videos of the songs and post their submissions. I'd like to see that. I think I want to look that up after we're done here. That sounds really cool. The album was nominated for 2 Grammy Awards, Rock Performance, and Best Box Set or Limited Edition Package.
Okay. I had no idea there's a Grammy, Grammy for packaging.
I didn't either. Like, best presentation of your material in purchasable form.
That I didn't know that was a thing until this week. And I am now, all those conversations we had about packaging, like the one about the album cover last week and about the New Order one that you like so much, looks like a Lego.
Yes. That was the Pet Shop Boys.
Oh, right. Pet Shop Boys. Yep. They're the same thing.
Oh, come on. Don't you dare. No, but like, have you gone back and looked at previous winners of the best box set or limited edition?
No, package? I wanted to have this conversation first before I started digging around because I think it's fascinating.
It totally is. Yeah. I'd love to see what's in that list. That's amazing. All right. So let's see. In 2008, they released the album, The Slip. This was released just 4 months after Ghosts, and it was recorded over a 3-week period. That's so quick for an album. It was again released under Creative Commons, and the single Discipline was distributed to radio stations by Reznor just 24 hours after it was mastered. Billboard 200.
So it really just go to show that if you want to put something out, and nowadays, if you have the right product and the way to do it, you can push things out and turn it around so fast now, because if you eliminate the middleman and all the hoops and the jumps and all the stuff, you can make things happen. All it takes is work and some drive.
Yeah, this is the thing that like a big record label would slow down. This process of recording the song, mastering it would be months. You know, it'd be like a 3-month process to get it from mastering to radio stations. And, oh no, we can't release it yet. We got to make sure the marketing is involved and get this and that.
Oh, and also we can't step on Ghost. Ghost is still out there and selling. We can't sell over that.
Exactly. We're gonna cannibalize the popularity of Ghost by releasing something so quick. Independent labels, man. It's the way to go. Totally the way to go. In 2009, Trent composed the theme for Tetsuo, the Bullet Man, which was a cyberpunk film. He worked with Atticus Ross in 2010 to compose the score for The Social Network. Love that soundtrack. That is a background music. If I want to get something done, that is like the perfect background soundtrack.
That's one with Lex Luthor, right?
Yes, with okay. Right that with that Lex Luthor. Yes. In 2011, he began work on the score for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. A cover of The Immigrant Song was done for the trailer of this movie. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah, I was going to say, spoiler alert, Brian picked it.
Surprise! In 2012, he composed and performed the theme for Call of Duty Black Ops 2. At least now his music that he records for video games is getting used for the video games.
Yes, exactly.
In 2013, he released the album Hesitation Marks. Albums. I love this one. I listened to it a couple times. 3 singles promoted the album. Came Back Haunted, Copy of A, and Everything. 2 EPs came after the album, Live 2013 EP and Remix 2014. EP. And the album was available in two formats, a standard one and another in extended dynamic range for audiophiles. This one reached number 3 in the album charts and was nominated for Best Alternative Music Album. Now, by the way, I'll say that here's an album that's my favorite of all his albums. And there are a few vocal tracks on this thing. It's not all instrumental. So, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of breaks my all his vocals are bad, all his instrumentals are good theme. I'm okay. I like some of it.
Yeah. And like, and I think that that's the thing we're kind of nailing on is when he's doing nailing, huh? The thing we're kind of hitting on is the fact that he, when he does what he does and it hits all the marks for me as a listener or you as a listener, it's great.
Yeah.
It's just that there are other times where he's doing those exact same things and it doesn't land the same way. And I don't know why or what the differences are without, you know, really getting internalized about how I'm listening to music. But there are things that when I hear it from him, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is brilliant. And then other times like, this is almost brilliant or why is this even happening? Right. And it every band is like that for me. I can't think of anyone who is 100% across the board with that. And with him, with the amount of stuff he's done, I'd say his success rate's pretty high.
Yeah, I think so. Especially the later you go in his career, for sure. All right, 2013, he released Welcome Oblivion, How to Destroy Angels. This was a project that he worked on with Atticus Ross, Rob Sheridan, and his wife, Mara Queen Mondig. They released an EP in 2010. They covered Is Your Love Strong Enough by Brian Ferry for the aforementioned Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And in 2012, they released another EP, and then they followed it all up with this album. The single was How Long, and recently they have posted on Instagram a hint that something may be coming soon. January of 2013, he appeared in the documentary Sound City, which was directed by Dave Grohl. Working together again, they're just, you know, it's going to happen.
They're buddies. They're buddies. It'll happen.
That's right. Ross and Reznor again worked with Fincher for Gone Girl in 2014. And in 2018, they released Bad Witch. This is the last in a trilogy that started with the EP Not the Actual Events in 2016 and Add Violence in 2017. The album has a jazz influence that has not been heard often or even at all in Nine Inch Nails albums. He did the score for The Bird Box on Netflix.
And I had no idea about that.
Oh, really? That he did the soundtrack? Yeah. No, I didn't either. But I did know that he did in 2019 the soundtrack for the HBO series Watchmen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's excellent. At the D23 Expo, the Disney Expo, Nine Inch Nails and Disney Expo, it was announced that Reznor was going to score the 2020 film Soul for Pixar. He'll also be working with Fincher again for Mank.
Okay. Is it me or is there something just kind of intrinsically wrong about a guy who does songs about, you know, masochistic behavior and videos that needed to be edited for MTV
doing something for Disney?
Not just Disney, Pixar. It's a freaking Pixar film.
It is, but I mean, song about loving little girls. And he did the score for The Nightmare Before Christmas, which is a Disney thing.
Yeah.
So it's all in, you know, it's all in context. It's not like it's not like Danny Elfman really feels that. Randy Newman likes little people. Almost midgets. Just happened to write a song where people thought, oh, he must hate little people.
Yeah, but okay. You know,
separate the music from the musician.
Let's have Buzz and Woody do a duet of Head Like a Hole, and then let's see how we do.
Head like a hole in me. Head like a hole in me.
The Randy Newman.
I want to, you like an animal, head like a hole in me.
The Randy Newman scored head like a hole cover of Nine Inch Nails.
I need to make this a thing.
Let's call it Paul and Storm. They do the Randy Newman jokes.
They do. Yes, exactly. Trent was also giving a writing credit on Lil Nas X seminal hit Old Town Road. Why? Because he sampled the snot out of 34 Ghosts 4. I've been in the valley, you ain't been up off that porch now. Can't nobody tell me nothing. You can't tell me nothing. Can't nobody tell me nothing. You can't tell me nothing. Riding on a tractor, lean all in my blood. Go back and listen to that one. I didn't have to pick that one up. That's crazy.
Yeah, who knew?
He also has a role. What's that?
Who knew? Now that I have to put a sample of Old Town Road into a soundography.
Jeez, no kidding. That's a great trivia question, too. He has a role as chief creative officer with Apple Music. This was originally Beats Music, and he stayed on after Apple gobbled it up, or Apple gobbled it up. All right, Hammond, tell me some statistics and general notes about Trent Reznor.
Okay, he has worked with tons and tons of people. Steve Abellini, Tori Amos, he's produced Marilyn Manson, he's toured with them a few times. Urban legend is they got banned from Utah because of some stuff they did together here in Salt Lake. I don't know, I wasn't there, but I guess they were quite the hellraisers here. He's worked with David Bowie, you mentioned that. He's credited touring with Bowie in 1995 for Staying Sober.
Oh, wow.
He's toured with Busta Rhymes, or he's worked with Busta Rhymes. But here's what I really want to hear, and I'm sad that it didn't come out. And remember, I teased this last week.
Yeah.
Under the name Tapeworm, he worked with Danny Lohner and Maynard James Keenan of Tool and Atticus Ross. But none of this stuff ever came out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The only kind of remnants of this stuff that ever made it was a song called Passive that ended up on the 2004 Perfect Circle album. Emotive on a Pucifer album.
Really?
So there's just all this stuff that he did with Tool, basically, and Atticus Ross, the guy he does scores with. There's got to be some cool stuff sitting around somewhere.
Oh my God. Yeah, just on an unreleased. Yeah, there's, boy, that's some great like tease for some material coming out, right?
Just yeah, I would do almost anything just to sit down at a computer and listen to those files. I don't need them. I just want to hear them.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, for sure. That's cool. I want to hear it too.
And then he produced Jane's Addiction. He's produced Queens of the Stone Age. And he also has played with Lindsey Buckingham at the Grammys. So he's all over the place. And it's not just angry Trent Reznor. He's done lots of things.
Right. Well, and Lindsey Buckingham, the guy is such an amazing talent. Like he's an underappreciated, talented guitarist. Mm-hmm. And so good on him that he got to play with him.
Yep.
Pretty cool. All right. So let's say you go see Nine Inch Nails in concert, or Trent Reznor solo, or Trent Reznor with Atticus Ross, or however you see them. They're not going to leave the stage until they play that one song, the one song you know they're going to play. And even before the house lights come up, they're going to play it in that second encore. You know it. What is that Stairway to Heaven song?
I only put three on the list because I could only think of three that would be that big.
Yeah.
It's Hurt, Closer, or Head Like a Hole. And my money, hands down, is on Head Like a Hole.
Definitely had like a hole for me as well. I think we could easily add to the list Bite the Hand That Feeds. I think that's one that probably gets played a lot in concert, but no, Head Like a Hole has got to be the one that's top of the list. And sure enough, number one is Head Like a Hole, 940 performances in concert. Second, though, is Wish,
Oh, wow.
And then March of the Pigs, Terrible Lie, which is another great one. Hurt is number 5, Gave Up. Closer is number 7, The Hand That Feeds is number 8. Sin and then Suck, which is a Pig Face cover, rounding out the top 10. He does a cover of Queen's Get Down, Make Love, which I think is from the first album, or Sheer Heart Attack. I can't remember, it was an early Queen hit. Dead Souls by Joy Division. Well, that's I'm Afraid of Americans, which is it's credited as a David Bowie song, but it was a joint project between the two of them, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And Adam and the Ants, You're So Physical is another one that he covers. That's crazy to think of him covering that. Well, speaking of covers, we pick a cover that we'd like to hear them perform or him perform. And as always, I go first. All right, now bear with me on this one because it's going to sound crazy, but I would like to hear a Nine Inch Nails cover of I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor. So, you know, Soft Cells is all synth. We talked about the Cake version a couple seasons ago, and Marilyn Manson's version is like all heavy production. But I think Trent Reznor's version would be somewhere in the middle of all that. It would have heavy drums. It would all be done in a minor key, but otherwise really, really sparse arrangement. Like somebody who's trying to convince themselves that they're fine without you, as opposed to knowing that they're fine without you, which is the original intent of the song.
You know what? I like it.
What?
I like it. I like it a lot, actually, because I could... Yeah. I could hear.
I was afraid. I was petrified. Kept thinking I would never live without you by my side. Yeah. Like you almost hear it being done.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And let that be the thing that Dave Grohl joins him for.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Cause the drums would be awesome.
Perfect. Yeah, yeah. Yep. Exactly. All right. What's yours?
So mine's off the wall too. So I picked O Fortuna from Carmina Burina by Carl Orff.
Yes.
And the vampire music, basically.
Right. Yep. Exactly.
The reason I picked this is because it has,
I connect with, by the way, I connected with a Guinness beer commercial from the early 2000s.
So between the ominous nature of the music already, the choir and the grandiosity of all of it wrapped up into one, then you put in a bowl with a healthy dose of Nine Inch Nail and Fincher scores. And I have a feeling you could get something that was undoubtedly scary and undoubtedly awesome as a result.
Yeah, I think that would be really cool. Cause he did a cover of In the Hall of the Mountain King for Girl with the Dragon Tattoo as well.
Mm-hmm.
No, that was for Social Network.
Yes.
And, so, you know, he's no stranger to doing covers of classical music. And I think that would be a great one. I'd love to hear that.
And I went down a huge rabbit hole, run of covers of Fortuna from Carmina. And there are some really, really good ones. And then there are some absolute garbage ones out there. So
have there been pop covers of that? There are people who are traditionally pop.
There have been rock and metal covers of it.
Okay. I can see metal. Yeah. Now that you say that,
I only kind of was digging for the heavier ones just because of one, me, but two, I was trying to find a comparison to the dreamy potential of a Nine Inch Nail one. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I found a lot of heavy ones, but there are also some of those that are not very good either. The best mix is when you get a band like Nightwish or Epica, these power metal that already put a lot of strings and choiry and female vocals into it. You get them with the big guitars. Yeah.
Yeah.
That
would be perfect.
Those are the best mixes, but I still think that there's something frightening about the thought of Trent Reznor doing it.
Cool. Okay. Yeah, I want that too. I want both of those things to happen.
Along with Dave Grohl.
Yeah, all with Dave Grohl for sure. Let's get to our playlist. This is where we each pick 5 songs from the catalog that we really enjoyed. We stay away from the big hits. You won't find a Head Like a Hole or a Closer, Hurt, or The Hand That Feeds or anything like that in this, but you might find some things that are kind of familiar. I'm going to start with mine. First in my list is a song from The Slip called Corona Radiata, and this was the second to last track on the album. Thank you. It is a very dark and brooding instrumental, but I was in the car. I was driving to Trivia, and it was nighttime, and the song just hit me perfectly for the mood I was in. Just kind of this like, you know, dark weather kind of moving in kind of thing. And I got to Trivia before it had finished. It was really close to the end, but I got to Trivia before it finished. When I got back in the car, I started the song back up to listen from the beginning again, because it's so cool. Love that. Second one, we talked about it before, Immigrant Song from Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the soundtrack to the David Fincher version. Karen O on vocals from the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, as well as Atticus Ross, frequent collaborator Atticus Ross, takes a song that was already at a 10 and cranks it up to 11. You know, it's already Led Zeppelin. You can't improve upon the Led Zeppelin version, but they certainly rocked it harder than Led Zeppelin did, which I wouldn't have thought was possible.
So as a spoiler teaser for an upcoming episode later this season, there's a band that does a cover of the Immigrant Song. And I can almost guarantee you're not going to like it even a fraction of the amount that you like this one.
I bet I can guess who that's going to be. My third song in my playlist is Copy of A. This was one of the songs that was released ahead of Hesitation.
Hesitation marks.
Assembled into something.
This song is like the if you have a 1 point is Trent Reznor's instrumental work and 1 point is his, I don't want to say radio, but the hits we know had like a hole closer, things like that. This is right in the middle of that, and it's the perfect combination of the two. I really, really liked it. Plus, it's got some great 80s keyboard stuff at the beginning. Really, really like that song. That was one that I marked as soon as... hesitation marks, huh? It was one that I marked down as soon as I started hearing it. I mentioned that he did the soundtrack to Watchmen. HBO has released, I think, a soundtrack for every episode. There are 8 episodes, and they released a soundtrack EP for every episode. Capitalize. Next to last episode ends with the credits and a cover of Life on Mars, David Bowie's Life on Mars, that plays over it, performed by Trent. They did not include that, probably because of royalties. They didn't include it on the soundtrack. But I think enough people demanded that track that Trent said, yeah, you know what? I'm going to release it myself as a free download. And he put it up on his website for people to download, which is super cool. This song, when I did my cover countdown of 2019, this was number 2, my second favorite cover from last year. And then song number 5, Hand Covers Bruise. This is the first track of the soundtrack to The Social Network. This is my absolute favorite Trent Reznor track. It is so simple. There's this kind of droning music in the background, but then there's this really beautiful piano melody that's put over top of it. And it's just enough, like just those two really disparate elements fused together to make this really beautiful song. And it's so simple, and it builds as it gets to the end of the track, and the next track's another good one. So it's like a great a great buildup and a great payoff on that song. Really like it. How about you?
Your list is always so good.
Yours are too, Hammond. I mean, you know,
especially when I was, especially with Underworld, my list was awesome.
Well, okay, yeah, maybe. Maybe you didn't pick some things that I would have picked, but. All right, let's hear your playlist.
All right. My first one is Find My Way from Hesitation Marks. This starts off a little bit like a Peter Gabriel song, and then it turns like a hard left and then doubles back and gets angry. But it's such a tense and slow burn. It's like it's really kind of off-putting, but it's also really fun to listen to because of the ride it takes you on.
Oh man, Hesitation Marks was such a great album.
It is. Yeah.
Really liked it. Okay, keep going. Sorry.
I Kinda Want To from Pretty Hate Machine. This does some really cool things sonically. But what really stands out in this is the solo in it, because it's really off the hook, to use the term the kids say. I don't know if they say that anymore.
Uh-huh. Is it on fleek?
It's on fleek. The solo's on fleek.
It's the cat's pajamas?
Yeah. The cat's pajamas are on fleek. The next one I picked was Reptile from Downward Spiral. When someone asks me, what is industrial music? This is pretty much what I'll give them to listen to, because this sums up everything that Trent stands for, at least on that type of music. It really kind of checks all the boxes to let you understand. It's got keyboards, it's got the guitar, it's got the vocals, it's got all the things that kind of make this that standout or signature song for that kind of music. But on top of all that, it's just kind of a cool song. Then next I picked Physical from the Broken EP. This is a heavy cover of Adam and the Ants. And I just found out that it was a cover while doing the research for this. And it's the perfect cover or perfect song for them to cover. But I also wish that they'd done Goody Two Shoes.
That'd be funny. Yeah, when we were going through the set list .fm stuff, this came up. So this is one that he hasn't not only included on the Broken EP, but also was included in concert.
Yep.
And now I want to go back and listen to it and say, why didn't this make more of an impact with me? Because I like Adam and the Ants.
Yeah. So
surprising I didn't even catch it.
And then the last one I picked was Burn from Natural Born Killers. Music and lyrics match as well as they do in this song, but like we said earlier, Trent's a really good lyricist and storyteller using lyrics, and then I feel like he's also very good at setting music to those lyrics that fit. So you rarely say, man, I don't understand why the lyrics and music don't match. Trent makes them match, and that's an art form, and I think he's masterful at it.
Very cool. Great set. there. Actually, all 10 songs are a really good set to add to your favorites, to your the hits, the ones you know and love. Perfect. Well, there is our Nine Inch Nails soundography. And love to hear what you think. We'll talk about how you can get a hold of us in just a minute. But we're going to tell you next episode, Black Oak, Arkansas. This is great because this is a band that I don't think I know anything about or could even tell you one song by Black Oak, Arkansas.
So I've started researching. And we covered a band that is similar to them before.
Zach Brown?
No.
The Avett Brothers?
No.
I don't know then.
Drive-by Truckers.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So it's that kind of Southern bluesy kind of.
Yep.
Oh, cool. All right. Can't wait. I didn't realize they were so old. It's funny because I would have thought, oh, Black Oak, Arkansas, they're kind of a newer band. No, that's 1970s.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Why didn't I know this?
All right. And believe me, they cover songs and you're going to be all over it.
Ooh, all right, cool. Excellent. I can't wait to hear them. Black Oak, Arkansas, going to be our next episode.
Oh, and by the way, I was totally oblivious of who these people were either. I saw them on a list, and so I'm like, hey, let's try this, and neither one of us know. The only reason I have any information is I've already started doing the research and listening.
Oh, cool. All right, good. This will be fun then for both of us. All right. If you want to get in touch with us, soundographypodcast@gmail.com. That's the email address we want you to use. It's a great way to get hold of both of us. We both get those emails. And it's if you want to say something to both of us, that's a great thing to use. You can also follow us on Twitter and message us there or reply. At the Soundography is our handle there. Of course, everything else right there at soundography.com. It's our website. It's our home base. You get every episode there by going into the archives. And every episode always includes a link to Amazon where you can buy a recommended album, a link to our Spotify playlists, which usually have all, if not all of the songs, or most, if not all of the songs that we include in our lists. I don't think Life on Mars will probably be in Spotify.
No, it's there. It's there.
Is it there?
Yeah.
Cool.
I put the list together today. It's there.
Trent, you're awesome, dude. Way to put that on there as well. So you'll find that Spotify there as well as links to our Patreon. We love getting your support of the show and we love sending goodies out to you. Big package just went out to all of our patrons last month with notepads and poker chips and stickers and cards and all sorts of great stuff. So big thanks to all of our supporters. And if you want to be a supporter, we'd love to have you help us with the show. Patreon.com/soundography. And there are a bunch of levels that you can look at, even ones where you make us listen to something and we have to do it. We have to do it.
Whoa, 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 whoa. We have to within reason.
Asterisk on the we have to. Yeah. I don't know. I am so grateful to our listeners who support us that I'd be tempted to just drop the caveat altogether.
Okay. You know what? If you're willing to, I'm willing to, but I make no promises what I say.
Right. We'll see. Somebody's going to come up with something that's going to make us go, oh,
here's the Mike Tyson musical starring Mike Tyson.
Yeah, but you know, there's only going to be like, it's only going to be like one album. We could get through one album. That's the other thing about that is like usually the really bad stuff doesn't last very long, so we don't have a lot of it to get through. We also love to get your reviews. Leave a review for us wherever you get your podcasts. Hammond, anything to close us out as I whack the microphone?
You know what? This was, like I said, this was an experiment that I'm glad I did. I've developed a new appreciation for Trent, but I also know I'm not going to be listening to any Nine Inch Nails for the next foreseeable future.
I'm with you. I'm with you on the early stuff. As soon as we're done here, I'm going to go listen to 34 Ghosts 4 and to hear that Old Town Road connection and that Adam and the Ants cover. So I've got some stuff to listen to when we're done here, but I really still enjoy the last stuff, and I'm keeping hesitation marks and the slip on my permanent playlist rotation because that's good stuff. All right. Well, we'll be back in a week with another episode of Soundography. And until next time, that's what I meant to say. Until next time, this is Brian Ibbett for Hammond Chamberlain saying thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.